You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, everybody. It's Wednesday night. Time for American Whiner. My name is Alex. Welcome. We are on podcastdetroit.com. I am sitting here with my very good friend, Mr. Gary Walker. Oh. Gary, how are you?
Fabulous, Alex. Absolutely fabulous, man.
Awesome. This is kind of the closing of a circle here because you were mentioned on the very first guest episode, which is I consider it the first episode of American Whiner. The very first episode is just mostly me babbling about not knowing what I'm doing. But Davey Downs, a good friend of ours, was on my first guest, and we were talking about having you on, and so here you are. So.
All right. Well, I'm just delighted we can make this happen, man.
Yeah. So we actually just came. Davey got married today.
Oh, my God.
And we were the witnesses at his wedding.
Oh, dude. So cool, man. It was a gorgeous ceremony. Exactly what it needed to be. Beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Moving stuff.
We got to sign some paperwork. And then we all went out for pizza. I drank in the middle of the day, which is something I haven't done.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, man. It's great. You know, I took time off from it, too. You know, just drinking in general. And, you know, I'm glad to be back on that horse for sure.
Absolutely.
Drinking kicks ass.
Yes, it does. Let's talk about how we met each other. We met through mutual friends, essentially, is the short version of the story. Yeah. But you actually told me today something that I had never known about you. And so why don't you tell the story?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, on your podcast with Ed, he mentioned a bunch of singers that tried out for the band.
Ed St. Antoine being one of the old guitarists from the Whiskey Pilots.
Yes, yes. And he mentioned a few duds, I guess. Like there was one weird stalker chick that was trying to stalk their drummer, and just people that were just god-awful. And I was one of the auditions, but thankfully the audition wasn't bad enough to be mentioned as one of the bad ones.
Well, I never knew.
Average one, I guess.
I never knew that they never mentioned that, or maybe they didn't. I was just too fucked up to remember.
No, I mean, like I said, it was super average, not noteworthy. I just did it one time. Davey just kind of brought me down for the practice one time, and I just thought I was sitting in on that. And he's like, let's hear them pipes. And I was like, I'll give you what I got, man. And I just thought of a song real quick and technically delivered it okay. But, you know, I don't blame them. I don't blame them the least for just being like, yeah, somebody else.
So did they even give you a yes or a no? Or was this kind of like, well, that was fun? Or,
yeah, they were like, you did all right. Like, it was met with the proper amount of enthusiasm, I would say.
Okay. And you said Nothing Else Matters by Metallica. That was your audition song.
I just had to quickly think of a song I actually knew the words to, and I was like, well, there's one.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, Hetfield's in my range, you know. I can fuck with that.
Well, I have to hear you sing now because I didn't know what you sang.
So. Nope. No, we won't be doing that today. I love hearing the sound of my voice, but not so much my singing voice.
Right? Yeah.
No.
So we've had quite a few adventures throughout the years. I mean, that was, as I've said numerous times now, that's 7 years ago now that we met, which is it's crazy to think that 2010 is that far away. I haven't – you guys and a couple other friends – like 2010 was the last year where I actually made friends that are – I have become good friends. That was kind of the last influx of good friends that I have was in 2010. I don't know what it was about that year. We've had quite a few, forays into various, we've gone up north a couple of times.
God, yep.
You were kind of the Willy Wonka of this, the shroom trip that we all took at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
It was,
I'll own up to that.
Yeah.
I was wondering where we were going to go with this, but yeah, if we're throwing that out there, sure. Yeah. I was the resident expert, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the best I could, but it was maybe overdone, but
that wasn't your fault though. Like you were blaming yourself for that. You did not do anything. In fact, you were probably the only reason that like kind of stabilized, you know.
Well, once shit went off the rails, I had to just get it back on track as best I could. And I think I did the best I could.
Yeah.
You know, the weekend was not totally ruined, but whatever.
Well, we can't go into details on that, but the reason I bring it up is because that's kind of to me, like when I think about you, that is kind of how like you, that just that story just kind of exemplifies, you know, the sort of role that I think that you've, at least for me, that I think of you as, which is you're this guy who you know everybody fucking loves you in this, in our social group. Mm-hmm. The, every time you come up there, everybody starts smiling. They're just like, oh, Gary, you know, like and it's every time you show up, it's like, oh, good, Gary's here. So this is going to be – so that's one of the reasons that Davey and I brought you out. I think we talked about you for a good like couple minutes actually. Oh, geez, on the – so you're kind of like kind. Rocco from Boondock Saints in a way, I think is
okay,
a good
comparison. I'll take that title. You know, I'm somebody I think I thrive when there's no plan, when it's utter chaos and we need to improvise. That's when I really shine.
Uh-huh.
But that's sort of just how I operate in life in mm-hmm. general. I'm not the least bit organized. And so, yeah, like when stuff gets real wacky, that's when I can like kind of buckle down and put everything where it's got to go for now, just to get us through this shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah, that's sort of how I roll. That's great. I try to be a delightful dude as best I can. So I'm glad. Obviously, I'm doing something right if I'm getting that kind of praise.
Right.
So,
well, why don't you tell us about yourself here? For because you know this is kind of your introduction show here. So
boy.
Like, who are you? You know, what's your story? Tell the nice listeners.
Stoner comedy guy. I don't know, but I recently quit, so I don't even know if I can own up to that title anymore. But with or without the weed, I definitely have the stoner vibe. Even at like age 8, people looked at me. They're like, "Man, you look high right now." And you're 8. It's just like the way my eyes are shaped or something. I don't know.
Like, and you're like, I don't even know what high is yet.
Oh, not at 8. No. not until I got into D.A.R.E. I got fed that line of shit.
Yeah.
And then, and I did, D.A.R.E. kind of worked on me because I was a gullible little goof when I was a kid. You know, I'd believe pretty much whatever you told me. If you were an adult, you told me something, I'm like, yeah, sure. All right. Thanks for letting me know. But, you know, as I got older, you know, you kind of wise up to the bullshit a little bit. And mm-hmm. D.A.R.E. was a huge bullshit factory, that's for sure.
Yeah, it
no
was.
No doubt about it.
That I didn't really know what drugs were until D.A.R.E. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess that was kind of the idea, right, is they wanted you to know what they were so you
didn't
take them.
Sort of nip it in the bud before you even got offered it.
Yeah, but
and
at the same time, you're immediately curious. You're like, what exactly is this stuff, and why am I supposed to stay away from it? So.
Yeah.
But did you grow up in Livonia or are you
Westland?
Westland.
My whole life, gorgeous Westland.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dump right now. It's great. I love it. So many empty, vacant commercial sites just ready for people to buy them with nobody lining up to do it.
Uh-huh.
Kmart's gone. The town's fucked without Kmart.
Oh yeah.
not really. Whatever. Yeah. Fuck Kmart. But like I haven't shopped there since I was like 9. You know, I wouldn't. Yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah, Kmart is one of those places you're like, I've always been aware of it, but I don't think I've ever actually been to one.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was younger, when they were still quote-unquote thriving.
Yeah.
Tell us, you know, you grew up in Westland.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, like, what are you into? Like, just what are your interests and, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Because you're kind of a guru when it comes to – like you can talk about anything. You're particularly really good with sports, which unfortunately I am not good with sports. But you're good with music.
Mm-hmm.
You're good with movies.
Just sort of a jack of all trades, whatever.
Yeah.
If it's remotely entertaining, you know, I'll give it a look.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. You know, the sports is easy to sort of figure out who the guys are. And, you know, there's just guys that are good players and guys that aren't. It's really that simple. Sometimes one guy gets like a hot season, but that's kind of boring. I don't like to get too much into sports. There's bigger issues in the world
mm-hmm.
than the score of the most recent events, so whatever.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the music, the live music especially, you know, I'm a 6-time Bonnaroo veteran. I guess mm-hmm. you could say I've been to 6 of those. I did a Lala. I did a Electric Forest. I would recommend any of those 3 festivals to anyone that's gone to every festival on the planet or never been to one at all. It's equally accommodating for either of those people. Lala may be a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
It can get a little mean, I guess. I don't want to say mean, but it definitely doesn't have the hippie vibe that a Bonnaroo or Forest especially has.
Huh.
Because it's in the city and you get a lot of the city people that are like, you know, fuck these tourists. And it's just a lot of people just kind of pushing their way to get to where they got to go. Security at Lala was it's really the only thing I can knock it for. You know, the lineup was good. You know, the way the stages are all set up is great and all that. But getting into the festival was just totally fucked when we went. I went with my girlfriend at the time. we stayed at the airport, like, hotel. So we had to take a L into downtown Chicago, 45 minutes each way every day. And we'd get off there, make our way to Grant Park, where Lala takes place. And there's literally, like, one security line to get in to this gigantic park that's all along Lake Michigan. And it just – it was just chaos. Like, one time I was in line and these kids just straight up ran in without getting patted down or anything, and really nobody did anything about it. And I don't know why I didn't take up arms with them, but you know.
When was this? When did you go?
Last year.
Okay.
Once I heard Radiohead was headlining, I mean, that was it. Uh-huh. I was in, you know. I was like, fuck everyone else. I don't care who is playing. And it turns out it was a solid show all the way. You know, we had a Major Lazer. Actually, we couldn't see them. But we went to an after party, like, Thursday night. Oh, God. Okay, so I just thought of this story.
Yeah, go for it.
All right,
I can tell.
So this is after the first night of Lollapalooza, and then we go to the Major Lazer show. And first off, the venue was, like, super particular about what you could bring in. And I ended up having to – I had a Bonnaroo bandana on. I had a pack of cigarettes I had just bought for the weekend. I'm a incredibly casual smoker, only if it's, like – music festival. Just gives you something to do between stages, basically, you know, whatever. And I had lighters and all that type of stuff, and none of that could be brought into the venue. So I, like, had to throw it all out right there. And, like, the cigarettes and the lighter, whatever, I can let that go. The Bonnaroo bandana was, like, something they send you every year. It's, like, a one-of-a-kind, in a sense, you know. If you went, you got it. I just, like, fished it out of the trash real quick when the dude wasn't looking.
Yeah, why the hell did they make you take the bandana
off? No colors, bro. I don't know. It's one of them deals. I don't know.
I thought it was maybe like a rival business type deal. Like, oh, no competing festivals.
It was just some fucking venue in Chicago just being dicks. I don't know. It's gang shit, I guess, is what I'd chalk it up to, so nobody gets a bandana. I don't know. I got it back, so I don't care that much. The cigarettes were really the biggest loss. But anyway, after the show, you know, we're on the L train. It's like 2:30 in the morning, and the only people on there are me, my girlfriend, this one dude, and then, like, this crackhead and a lady who was taking care of the crackhead. And at some point, the crackhead just got up and was just sprinting back and forth all across this empty car, screaming at the top of his lungs, just going ballistic. And I'm just, like, holding my girlfriend real close. I look over at the dude across from us, and he just has this look on his eyes like he's never seen this type of shit happen before. And he looks like a Chicago resident to me. And I figured maybe he's familiar, but no, he's just as kind of freaked out as us. But we're like, let's let this, you know, take its course, see what happens. And the lady eventually, like, calmed him down and all that type of stuff. So, you know, it was whatever. But it was interesting thing to be a part of.
You got the full Chicago experience then.
Yep, right then. Like, definitely.
100%. The crackhead on the L train.
Yeah. Just me and the girl and a couple strangers and a crackhead.
I went to Chicago a couple times about 10 years ago for G-Fest. I talked about that one when my buddy Franz Vorenkamp was on here. And we were on that same – it was the blue line. That's what we were on.
That's what we took.
And it was up near Rosemont, and I saw these two guys – it was late at night. It was me, Franz, our buddy Bob Keith, and these two other guys. And I'm looking at them, and I'm like, I know who these guys are. And I look over at Franz, and I'm like, I think those are the Black Keys. And
he made it sound like you hung out with them once.
Well, no.
I've seen these guys at a party or
something. Well, no. It was like I recognized them, or
nice,
I thought I did.
Nice.
So anyway, I can't really – they're sitting in front of us, so I can see them. And they're kind of turning and talking to each other. So I'm like, that's Stan Auerbach. Like, I know it. So – it takes me like, you know, a good 5 minutes of kind of talking quietly with Franz and Bob I'm like, is that them? You know, and finally I get up the courage and I'm like, hey, and he turns around. As soon as he turns around, I'm like, oh, that's not fucking him. But now I've got his attention. So I have, I'm like, oh, hey, are you the Black Keys? And he looks at me and he's like, no. I'm like, oh, well, I thought maybe you might be them. I was telling him, like, you should have just lied and said, even though as soon as he turned around, I was like, oh, yeah, he's got a completely different nose. His eyes are too close together and all. But, yeah, so that's my only real L train story from Chicago.
See,
I don't
almost met the Black Keys if it was actually them.
Yeah.
You would have totally met them.
I saw a guy who looked kind of like them from the back.
Back of the head twins.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, but so you did, I'll ask you this, like, You said how many Bonnaroos?
Six, I think.
Six Bonnaroos so far.
Everyone since 2011 up to 2016.
Oh, my gosh, man. Yeah, I know that you were going every year there for a while.
Is that six? That's six.
From 2011 on, yeah, 6 years.
Okay,
yep.
Yeah.
Because I've only done one Lollapalooza, and that was in 2008. I think Radiohead played that year, but I didn't see them because I was only there one day. But
I get a lot of that. people just go for one day. It's a very popular one-day festival. It's expensive.
It is.
I guess that's
the
only knock on it is easily the most expensive. I could do two of, like, Rue and Forest, mm-hmm. like, put together for a Lolla. And that's with us staying outside of the city, essentially, by the airport. That's why we did that. It was like a grand a night. Like,
oh, my God. Yeah,
I don't know if it was that bad, but too rich for my blood, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I deliver pizza.
Yeah. That's right. So what I was going to ask you, though, is because I didn't know that Bonnaroo is so much more affordable than Lollapalooza. Because I'd like to do the whole festival thing, but I've never really – I just don't have the time or the means for
it. Yeah, it's a whole, like, weekend off type of deal. And the only reason is Lolla's in the city. It's in a big city, and cities are just more expensive. There's no getting out of that. Rue, total opposite. Manchester, Tennessee, rural area. It's, like, literally just suddenly becomes, like, the biggest city in Tennessee that weekend. You know, don't quote me on that, but it pretty much does. You know, you're talking 80 to 100,000 people. The Paul McCartney year, oh, my God, shoulder to shoulder. It was tight quarters that year, dude.
Was that the best year, would you say?
No, for me, 2012, you know, that Radiohead bias, and that was the peak of my drug use. I don't know how much that ties into it, but actually that year I couldn't smoke weed because I was on probation, so I had to ramp up everything else, which was responsible, but hey, it worked, you know. And the first year, too, for me, it was really good. But, you know, it kind of, you know, the group fluctuated throughout the years. We've gone with as few as like five and as many as like 19. One year we had two RVs. We had a buddy with an RV, and then another buddy rented another one, and we went as a big convoy, and we had like a mega camp set up, and it was dope, dude.
Those are the moments you remember the rest of your life. That is
absolutely, dude. I don't regret a single one, though. You know, there wasn't a bad lineup in a year. I either saw bands I've always wanted to see and usually ended up discovering, you know, 5 or 10 or even 15 some years. You know, but after a while, I think I kind of – it just kind of wore me down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to explain. I don't know. Like, I'd love to go back, but – I think maybe I need a year off. Like the festivals, they take a lot out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you don't go hard, like the Forest, I didn't do any fucking crazy drugs. I just smoked some weed, and that was pretty much it. I was mostly there to like use my veteran experience to help the other campers. And actually, the people next door needed a bit of help. Like I had tools to set up camp that, you know, these people aren't thinking to bring. They're like, you know, I got 50 hits of Molly, but I don't have a fucking hammer to draw and put stakes in the ground.
There you go again. See, like what I was saying, just the guide sort of. Right?
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, me. I like to prepare for stuff, you know, like that. Like I know how to have fun, I guess. And I know the not fun parts of having fun, what that takes. That's sort of how I was raised, you know, because my dad is very much the same way. He's the guy that brings all the shit to the party that you wouldn't think to bring.
Uh-huh.
Plus a bunch of other stuff, liquor mostly. But like, you know, just like that tables and chairs, the not fun stuff.
Uh-huh.
But you got to sit somewhere. You're going to get drunk and you're going to want to take five. Have a seat. And my dad's got your back all the way. So yeah, that's what at that point, you know, by the time I went to Electric Forest, we got hit with rain like you wouldn't believe. Completely flooded. Had to move camp. There was a straight up like swamp that formed behind us.
Oh my God.
Really the only way to describe it.
It was like, what is that? Was that Lollapalooza 95 with all the mud? Was that a Lollapalooza?
Oh no, that was Woodstock.
Was that Woodstock?
Yeah.
Okay,
it wasn't 95 though. I think
94.
Woodstock. Yeah, because somebody threw a big chunk at Billy Joe Armstrong and caught it and ate it.
Oh, my God. He did?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I remember Green Day getting pelted with mud.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't remember. I was eight when that happened.
Yeah.
But I do remember hearing about it. I didn't know he ate it, though. That's freaking crazy. I remember him pounding it with the mic.
I felt like he took like a bite out of it.
I wouldn't
say
be surprised.
He sat down with a fork and a knife or nothing. But he definitely took a little bite out of it, sure.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I completely believe.
That's so punk rock, dude.
Yeah.
It is, though. You know, I grew up loving Green Day, And there's no reason to really flip on those guys. Whatever, you know, they did their thing. At the end of the day, they wrote some fucking great music, dude. So
yeah, they had their two major evolutions. You know, you got Dookie, 90s Green Day, when mm-hmm. they were still kind of the grungy punk band, you know, those three Stoner California dudes. And then you have the American Idiot Green Day, which is the legendary stadium-filling rock stars.
It took them to a whole other level. And I love American Idiot, you know?
Yeah, that was a solid album.
And it was, you know, I love a band willing to do something like that, be ambitious, you know, put out a piece with some heart, some character, tell a story.
Yeah, well, you know what I love about that story is that they had already, written and recorded, I believe, their next album. And then something happened. I don't know if it got lost or deleted or stayed.
I heard it was stolen.
It was stolen.
The masters were stolen, so they had to completely start fresh.
Right. And and what they came up with was American Idiot, which is now, I mean, kids know what American Idiot. Nowadays, when I say Green Day to a kid, they know American Idiot before they know Dookie, which was when I first was introduced to Green Day, it was like that was the album
Dude, everyone on the block had that album. Mm-hmm, and the cover was so cool. But man, I remember I was listening to like 89X one time, and this kid called in and requested Green Day. He said some old school Green Day, like American Idiot. And
oh,
I just like
my God,
slapped my head. I'm like, man, fuck you, dude.
I graduated from high school the year that came out.
Yeah, they have like five albums that came out before that. Like, are you kidding me? That's major, not including their first two albums, pre-major label.
Right, right. Yeah, Kerplunk is early Green Day for me.
Kerplunk, yep.
I guess what do you got going on recently, man? Like, what are you up to these days?
Just getting my life together, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, what every person in their late 20s in this country is doing. Just like being like, wow, this didn't quite work out like I thought it would. back to the drawing board, I guess. But yeah, it's mostly that. Just kind of figuring out what I want to do. You know, I'm too smart to stay in the pizza game. Everybody knows that. But at the same time, I feel like it's really difficult to just commit to one thing, like, especially if you're going to use schooling to get there.
Yeah.
Like, God forbid I drop, you know, 80-100 grand into an education and I get in some field and I'm like, man, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want to end up like that. So I'm being a little risk averse about it. So it's a little bit finding my way and that type of stuff. But I feel better than I have in some time, so I think I'm on the right path. That, to me, says I'm doing the right thing. So,
do you think you'll pick up the comedy thing again?
I really should. It's my best great hope to, you know, make wealth beyond my wildest dreams and attain the fame that I claim to crave. But, I got no choice, I feel like, in a way. Like, it's going to be my best shot at doing something like that.
Well, I never really – I mean, I knew that you had done some comedic work before, but I'd never really spoken to you in depth about it.
Yeah, well, there ain't much to it. Like I said, it was like two shows, and I was just kind of a lazy ass. That's when I was peak stoner.
Uh-huh.
And it was like – the only reason the two shows even got done was because that
– The class
I mentioned to you earlier.
And who taught the class again?
A guy named Bill Bouchard. Mm-hmm. Very funny guy. And he plays locally all the time, or performs, I guess you would say. I'd go check him out, dude. I'd support Bill. I feel kind of bad because after the second show, he sort of hit me up. He's like, you want to do another one, man? And I just was like, I don't know, because I was just – it was like I did like a graduation performance. That was the second one. But then he's like, you know, your material is like good enough to, you know, just go out on a run if you want to just check it out. So the week before I did the graduation performance, I did another one. That was the one that was – it was like Davey, Ed, Jess, and maybe Brett was there. Not too sure. But the second one, like half the people there were people I knew. So, you know, that was easy. I forgot half my material and I still like crushed it. Because that show I drank a little bit too much before I went on. And I got to this part where I was describing – it was something to do with getting high. So it kind of worked that I forgot what it was. And I just made it work, you know. All you're trying to do really when you're on a stage performing comedy is just get laughs. It doesn't matter how you do it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the night I performed, I don't think I was the best guy, as much as I'd like to say that, because there was a dude that was just doing all this self-depreciation stuff. Like, he just making fun of himself the whole time. And that was pretty much his whole shtick. There was no structure to it. He was literally just talking about just how dumb and shitty his life was, but in a funny way, and people dug it, and I was into it myself. And,
then he's like, no, seriously, I'm gonna go home and kill myself. Stop, like, help. You're like, God, this is genius.
Yeah. Oh, this guy, man, he's pushing the bounds. Yeah. No, so yeah, that's all you're going for is laughs, and I'd be able to do that.
Yeah, man,
pretty confident.
Well, it's never too late, and you know, like,
yeah,
you
especially
said,
with that, you know, I don't gotta go out and play drums for 2 hours. And, you know, that's a workout.
Well, if you do that, man, you let us know, and we'll, you know, you can come on here and promote a show or something. And
that'd be awesome, man. I'd appreciate it. I mean, for now, it's literally just Rinky Dink open mic stuff. And Joey's Closed, that was where I performed. That makes me feel old. The comedy club I performed at does not exist anymore.
Where was that?
It was on Plymouth Road in Livonia.
Oh, okay. I think I've been there before.
Upstairs of Kickers, basically.
Yeah, I'd been there one time for another friend of mine. It was a friend's friend, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on break here, so we're going to take a quick 10-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to find out what Gary wants to whine about. So, and he got a great topic, too, so we will be right back.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
Fucker.
We are back. American Whiner, Wednesday night. We are here with Mr. Gary Walker. We're on podcastdetroit.com. Second half of the show, you know what that means. Gary, what do you want to whine about?
Oh, gosh. Well, Alex, I guess it would just be the state of mental health, particularly in this country, the lovely United States of America right now. You know, obviously, there's plenty to whine about in this country right now.
Indeed.
But I think a lot of it stems it starts there. You know, there's a certain stigma with it, you know, where people, crazy people are just sort of cast aside, forgotten about, get over it, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that simple, you know. It's easy for somebody without those kind of problems to just – you know, be like, well, have you tried this? And it's like, well, obviously, yeah, I've tried everything, you know, that type of deal. And, you know, on top of that, we've really kind of moved away from even funding it. You know, like, we're talking, you know, in the 50s, we actually invested in mental health institutions and researched the stuff. And then we just kind of stopped funding it and have sort of refocused on expanding prisons, and that's sort of where they all move to. We just put all the crazy people in jail because, you know, if you're crazy and eventually you're going to break the law just because maybe you don't have the most tenuous grasp on reality or whatever the case may be. And there's just so many laws now, you know, you break like 6 a day,
yeah,
probably. So it's only a matter of time. And then when you put these crazy people in jail with legitimately awful, shitty people that should be in jail, and then just throw in, you know, people from the drug war, you know, just stoners and low-level dealers and shit, like, that doesn't sound like a winning combination to me, you know? I don't think we should be investing so heavily in prisons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Well, when you say the state of mental health, do you mean more like the fact that people that are mentally ill, the way they're treated, or is it more
it's a little bit of that, but to me, everybody is, like, a little crazy in a way, you know? You almost need a psychiatrist like you need a doctor. You know, obviously some people are physically healthier than others, but I just don't think it's something that we as a people really, you know, take too seriously, and we don't think about it. We just go to work, do our shit, you know, check in with the people we care about here and there when we can, but we've lost our humanity in a way, I think, and that's sort of ties to it. You know, you got to sometimes just take like 5 minutes and just figure out like really what the hell is going on with you, and, you know, make sure you're wired right. You know, and there's a way to do that now. You know, you can get like a blood test done that like just tells you if you got too much of this or not enough of that in your head, chemically speaking. And, you know, when you look into that stuff, you can do something about it. You know, and that's – I think we have – millions of people in this country not doing a damn thing about it, and then you wonder why everyone's just kind of acting like a big old jag-off all the time.
Well, one of the reasons I think people – and there's so many layers to this. There's so much to unpack when you bring up the statement, because it all ties into the fact that everything is about money and everything is about status, you know, and it's – the problem is, like you said, people – people can do something about it. It's like they might have access to it, but they can't always do something about it because it costs money to you know,
expensive as hell.
Mental health insurance is, or health insurance in general, does not cover mental health always. In fact, I think that that's kind of a luxury. If you find a health insurance plan through a job or something that covers that as well as it needs to be covered, then you know, you got a good deal right there.
It seems like rich people are the only people with psychiatrists. And then everyone's like, well, you're rich.
Yeah.
Why do you need one? And it's like, well, turns out money isn't everything. Money's really nothing, man. That's almost kind of the big problem. That's sort of like the lowest common denominator. We've decided money is the most important thing around here. And that's pretty fucked up because that's not necessarily like the best measure of a society. You know, yeah, we can make this money, but – you know, like, look at the health insurance industry. It's a let's not mince words. It's a huge fucking scam. It's just people doing paperwork. You know, every time you go to the doctor, you know, the CEO of Merrick or whatever the hell, that dude pulls in like $41 million a year. You know, that doesn't come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That's you when you go to the doctor, when you buy your prescriptions, when you do that shit. He's taking a cut. And along with his entire corporation he's built, that's you're paying for all those people just to cross some T's and dot some I's, you know? My girlfriend worked – or ex-girlfriend, I should say. Forgive me. Not that that's relevant, but, you know, there's a
– she like, worked for
a company that just processes health insurance claims. Like, you know, lets you know if you can go to the doctor. That's literally their entire job, is to just make sure these people – are allowed to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody – and it's a total rinky-dink operation for sure. I won't get into it anymore, but that's – why does that exist? Why don't you just go to the fucking doctor and then not incur all these middlemen in the process?
It exists so they can charge for it. That's why it exists.
But they're making money, so way to go, economy, you know, and that's how we look at it. Or like, you know, food waste. We made all this food, but we threw out $45 million worth of it or whatever the hell. I don't know, but – In some measures, that's a good thing because the food got made. Somebody made money off that food. But if people don't get to eat it, then what value does it have?
It's not about the efficiency of the actual – how the product is used or produced.
Just
it's just
it
about
that.
Yeah, it's just that it is produced in the money that is generated from its production.
Yeah. That makes a society sick, man, I think.
Yeah, it does. And I think we're really, you know, ever since the 80s. The 80s is when it started.
Reagan.
Yeah, well, we've been – you know, it wasn't even him. He was just the cue card reader that they put up so that everybody would buy what they were selling. But, you know, one of the things that you mentioned I want to get into here a little bit is, you know, rich people are the only ones that seem to be able to afford psychiatrists and mental health, you know, insurance and all the rest of that, or treatment, I should say.
Yeah.
And I actually read an article recently that was talking about that problem where a lot of psychiatry students – they're not helping the people that really need the help the most. They get out of school, and because, you know, everybody in this country is raised and bred to be told or to think that they need to make as much money as possible, they go off and so they start talking to rich people about their problems so they can charge them $400 an hour and become rich too. Which, I mean, at the same time, it's like you can understand, like, we're all trying to survive here, and the more money you have, the easier it is to survive. So you're going to do what you got to do. But it's a system that is encouraging selfishness and rewards selfishness, and that's exactly what you get.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
you know, like, if you're a psychopath, it's easier to make it to the top because you can just, you know, cut the fat. You fire people because the people aren't even people to you. They're just numbers.
And they're resources.
They're either making you money or they're not. And if you let them go, you don't lose a wink of sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, I could never run a business. You know, that's Charlie, man. Like, you know, maybe he's not the best employee, but Charlie's a good fucking dude and I'm happy to keep him employed, you know, and that's me. So will I ever be a good businessman? Hell no. Not with that line of thinking.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe if I just get the right group of people around me, that'll do the trick.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of luck though.
Yes, it does. Well, it also gets into the whole, you know, anybody who is not, you know, there's kind of two levels to it where – rich people have – if you have the means, you can – it doesn't matter if you're mentally ill or not. You can get the treatment for it. And sometimes in a lot of cases, they don't even really have much of a problem. They just think they do.
Yeah.
And because they have the money to blow, they go in and spend the money and they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, here's some pills.
I have 9 Ferraris and I'm still seeking fulfillment in life.
But then you have the people below that can't do anything, that have actual problems. And, you know, there are people in the upper class that definitely do need treatment and they should
100%.
Get it. But it all comes down to, are you making money for the system? And if you haven't figured out how to do that, then you're going to have a very hard time with it.
Absolutely.
So, I guess, like, what have you had any experience with this particular issue with the whole mental, not you specifically, but just, you know, in general?
Well, I mean, you know, my brother took his own life. So you don't do that unless something's going on. And that was something that was left kind of unchecked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people that knew him well didn't quite, you know, there were signs there, but he did a good job of keeping it under wraps. You know, he seemed like a perfectly fine, happy kid, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, hitting all the right buttons. He had a great girlfriend that he cared about and all that type of stuff. But
are you comfortable talking about this? I didn't know you are. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to get into it.
I'm not going to, you know, cry or have any weird kind of anything. You know, that's kind of what this whole discussion's about.
Yeah.
It is going to be about uncomfortable discussions all the way, because it's something there's a certain air of mystery about it, really. The whole, you know, exploring the human brain. I think we know less about that than we do about, you know, the bottom of the ocean or even space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't. This is something Bill Hicks said back in the day. That's where we need to go.
Yeah.
Next. I think we've conquered every square inch of this planet, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So the only place like we can really go now is within ourselves.
It's inward. Yeah.
And we're not really doing that. Not at the level we should be, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I said earlier, to me, it's like just as easy as going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it should be. Anyway.
If you're physically ill, you should just go to the doctor. If you're mentally ill, you know, go see a psychiatrist, you know, because the mental health is just as important as the physical health. Because if the brain ain't working right, fucking nothing's going to work right. You're not going to want to get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to be less motivated to do shit, and you're going to get stuck. You know, that happened to me. You know, I won't lie, dude. Like, I had some tough years for a bit there, but I don't know. I just kind of stuck with it, made a couple changes, and yeah, I'm doing better. I ain't where I need to be, but I definitely feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it's a journey. You know, you're getting there.
Yeah,
it's
you know, and there were some years though where I was like, you know, I didn't really tell people. That's not something I wanted to talk about, because I just don't like bumming people out.
Yeah,
I guess that's my whole mantra. I want to be your buddy, and I don't want to bum you out. So if I'm going to say something that's going to like upset you or make you sad, like, I don't want to say that thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
That goes back to old Charlie there. I don't want to fire Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to go on and be a drag ever. You know, I like being a lively, entertaining person. I like uplifting people. So that's sort of what I focus on. And, you know, maybe that kind of came at my own expense for a bit, but I think I made it out, you know, like there was that period where I wasn't working. I wasn't doing much of anything, and I was just fucking stuck. And then I got a gig. And that was enough to kind of move me forward. It was a gradual process. I'm still working on it, as I said, but, you know, I'm kind of there, I feel, a little bit. Definitely making some fucking serious progress. So between me and my brother, yeah, definitely. I know enough about this stuff. I'm not an expert, but.
Well, I think just that, you know, it's it all comes back, like we were saying earlier, to the whole our sort of cultural, you know, the zeitgeist or whatever, which I said is money and status.
Yep.
That does not help, because in addition to having these problems, you know, inside your head, which you first of all, you're told it's a moral failing. Not always. It's a lot of people are cool about it, but, you know, that is always kind of an underlying. Even when somebody tells you it's not your fault, you still kind of feel, you know, like, you know,
you did something.
Yeah. So in your opinion, like, how do we get away from this? How do we reduce the stigma, and how do we sort of improve the state?
I mean, you just got to have kind of the right mindset about it, for one, which is a bit ironic, I guess. You got to think about it a certain way, you know, which you obviously can't force anyone to do. But I mean, yeah, you know, limiting the stigma is number one. And that's just going to come with, you know, what we're doing right here. Just even just talking about it, just letting people know they're hearing the words, and it's permeating in their brains, and it's making them think differently than they normally would. So that in itself is progress. But we're talking, that's raindrops, and we need a tidal wave here at this point. So, you know, from there, it would have to be just expanding it. It would have to sort of fall under that health insurance umbrella a bit more. You know, we need more people to have more access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So It's got to come with that. Now, obviously, that's going to be a whole other thing. We can't even get people to go to the regular doctor, you know, for free. You know, that's been a bitch to pass, mm-hmm. even though, God, you want a long list of all the countries that enacted socialized medicine and then got rid of it. Here it is right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Because exactly. It works.
Yes.
It just does.
Yeah. I work with Canadians. I've worked with British people. And every time I bring up the health issue, they talk about it and they're like, you know, America's system has some benefits. But then every single time, man, every single time I ask them, which one would you rather have? They say, I would rather have the one that I have in Canada.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wish when I was a kid, that's what I thought. Because mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I just went to the doctor.
Yeah.
I didn't think that we had to shell out money or sign up for some fucking thing or make sure we're going to this doctor instead of this doctor. And I just went to the doctor when I was sick. I really thought it was that easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it convoluted, I guess? It's just one of them things where, what the fuck, man?
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, like most things, it's just a cash grab, dude.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that, dude.
Yeah. So. Well, hopefully, you know, within the next generation, we fix this. It's you know, hopefully, by the middle of this century, if we haven't figured it out,
it's going to
be – we're going to be in deep shit because I don't think – you know.
I think it'll come sooner.
I hope it does.
Too many people our age just getting shafted on this.
Yeah. Well, once we – I mean, because the thing is you got people like, you know, our age that that have kind of been eking it out and like I'm doing okay, but I just – I see a lot of people and they're putting in their time, you know, they're putting in the time, mm-hmm. they're working and they're still struggling to get ahead.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that if we don't do something about this within the time frame, you know, as soon as possible,
mm-hmm.
there's nobody's going to remember what it was even like before, you know, they're not going to think that it's normal for a regular person to not have to struggle like people do.
It's going to become so ingrained. We're almost – it's – you know, going to be corporate enslavement in a way, mm-hmm. I guess. I hate to use a term like that.
Yeah, it sounds exaggerated, but that is essentially what it could become. I mean, all those dystopian novels, you know, could be
it's not the government. It's
prescient.
That's what I don't get. These pro-corporate, like, I get it. Corporations have a right to exist and all that, but like – you can't just leave them unchecked, you know.
No, they don't deserve
stuff. Reel it in, people.
Yeah, nobody. That's the whole point. That was the whole point of this country, which is nobody, no, you know, institutionalized wealth or generational wealth gets to tell the rest of civilization how to live just because.
Yeah,
that was the whole deal. And if you put your time in and you keep your nose clean, you're going to be all right. That was the deal.
Was being the operative word.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that ain't the case now. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I said earlier, you know, people are just a resource, a cost.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, you know, there's no soul to that. There's no life. There's no purpose. It's just a number on a sheet and they're either doing it for you or they ain't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just don't think you can have – That's fucked up, man.
Yeah.
Well, super fucked up.
It'll, you know, I do like to be an optimist and I do like to think. I mean, we're sitting here talking about
we'll never stop fighting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, we're laymen and we're sitting here talking about this.
Yeah.
You know, 100 years ago, people like us, we probably wouldn't have even really been aware of what was going on because we wouldn't have had access to the information. So if people like us nowadays are talking about it and they were able to figure it out, get that first wave, you know, overcome that first wave of industrialization and wealth concentration 100 years ago, even before 100 years ago, mm-hmm. then certainly with the internet and everything else, we can – you would think we'd be able to figure something out.
We live in an age of absolutely unprecedented information sharing and just logistical expertise. You know, we have the potential to move whatever resources kind of wherever, whenever – at a moment's notice with just this level of communication we have. You know, the world is absolutely 100% connected whether you want it to be or not. So mm-hmm. that's, you know, I don't get the nationalist rhetoric when it
– Well, I understand why it's there, but I just don't – the problem is that the whole – like you said, the world is connected now and globalization happened. But the problem is getting back to the whole thing, it's only benefited literally like a busload of people.
Yeah.
And so basically what happened in the United States after the Industrial Revolution, where it was all organization and unions and things like that, that needs to happen. but on a global level. And it's, I think that it won't even be, you know, just like governments provided everything either. I don't think that's the way to go necessarily. But the thing is I think because, you know, you look back at the founding fathers and how before, in the middle ages, you had kings and emperors and all that. Those were dictatorships, and nobody thought that that was ever going to change. And then all of a sudden, bam, the political process. It's like, no, everybody has a right to say how the political process is run. I think that what could happen is how we solve this problem is we democratize the economy, where it's – because basically corporations are empires right now. Yeah. CEO is – I mean, he has his executive board and everything. But if the top tells you to do something, you do it and you don't have any say.
Yeah.
So I think that I could see that happening, and a lot of people – don't even it's such a radical thought that a lot of people are even I don't know how it would be implemented.
So you're talking about running a corporation. Let's say the corporation's 50 people, but those 50 people all work on the floor. They do whatever. There's not just some dude up in the office calling the shots. It's everybody that's in there doing the work decides the direction the company moves in. That's
basically. But I mean, even there's still a dude in the office, but he's like he's elected, or maybe he is. Maybe he, at the very least, he doesn't just get to tell everybody what to do. They have a say in how things are run and how and what direction they should take.
Yeah,
that's the basic, you know, and everything else. Just
so that's like kind of like next level unionizing in a way, instead of just standing up for the workers, you're looking at the company as a whole.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the employees there.
Yeah.
So, dude, I'm down. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And then, because then if the employees are, you know, are the ones choosing, they say, well, you know, yeah, we have to have mental health coverage in our health insurance. Yeah, and please. Then it's like, maybe you don't even need single payer at that point. If everybody goes, I mean, I think that it would be at least, like you said, everybody else that's tried it, it's worked out.
Yeah.
So I think that we should at least try it. But, if that would be a really interesting compromise, because the Democrats are happy because all of a sudden poor people and regular people aren't getting shafted by the system, and conservatives are happy because it's not the government just providing everything.
Yeah.
So
it's still private in a way. Like, we don't have to throw out all these people who do jobs I genuinely think are useless. I mean, there's probably going to be some trimming.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a lot of fat.
In the health insurance industry, definitely.
Without question. So that would – that sounds good to me, man.
Yeah. Well, so we're coming up on the end here. So why don't you I always like to end the show on a note of hope here. So we've kind of touched on this already, and I kind of already asked you this, but like in your opinion, you know, what do we need to do in order to, not just even with the mental health thing, but like aside from talking about it, you know, what do you think we need to do to get past where we're at now and improve the general state? And I know that's a huge – the pressure's on. But
definitely.
Just in your opinion, like what are your thoughts?
You put me in a kind of a sticky pickle here, man. I just don't think I have one ready-made solution necessarily. But I mean, obviously it's got to become more accessible to everyone. You know, you got to be able to go at the very least. And – Just get checked out. You know, like I said, everyone's got varying degrees of sickness.
Issues,
you know. Some people are way worse off than others. Maybe, you know, you just need to go once a month and just check in and make sure your shit's working right. But it just almost take it more seriously, you know, and provide it to more people. You know, there's ways, like I said, you can analyze what's in the brain, what chemicals are firing and not firing, and figure out what's up with people and just – you know, take it more seriously, really. It's that simple.
We've got a good start on it. Now we just need to expand upon it and make it more universally accessible.
Absolutely. You know, everybody's got to be able to get their head checked. It's really kind of all we got to do. And once everybody's got their head right, you know, maybe we'll be able to participate in discourse once again, you know,
in a constructive way. Right?
Instead of just trolling everybody left and right, which, you know, admittedly, every now and then I pop – if I see something that really just kind of irks me – I just like to jump in and just sort of rattle the cage a bit. But if I'm having a discussion with somebody, I don't want to call them a dumbass because they disagree with me. You know, I just want to give them the best info I can and try to be respectful. Be like, listen, you know, whatever you're spitting out right now, I don't think it's quite working, and here's like why.
So there we go.
Yeah. I'm just trying to set a good example here, Alex. It's really that simple. But I don't have all the answers. Not even close.
Well, neither do I. So, but that's why we sit here and talk about it. Yeah. So, Gary, thank you so much for coming on, man. No problem, we're gonna have you back. I mean, within the next couple months at some point.
Hopefully,
I think November is when we're gonna start the group shows. So, at some point in that around there is when we'll hear you again. But thanks so much for coming on, man.
Dude, thanks for having me, man. I really dug it. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we will do it again. So, yeah, we are on podcaststraight.com. Please, American Whiner, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. I will be back next Monday with another musical guest, and very much looking forward to that. So everybody have a great weekend, and I will talk to you on Monday.